Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We're live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what is going on?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I hope I'm allowed to ask it of you.
Sure.
I'm not sure whether I am or not. But
having a weird day anyway, my friend, so go ahead.
Okay, well, maybe this will make it even weirder. You sent me a very weird text yesterday with about a half hour to go in the show. Yesterday at 5:15, you sent me a picture of a box of wine that had been delivered to your house.
Yeah.
And I'm worried that 2021 might have broken you, Gambo, and you're actually drinking now.
You mean 2020?
Well, 2020, 2021. I mean, the first 7 days of 2021 might be enough to break anybody. So I'm worried that maybe 2021 broke you after 2020 did its very best to break you. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you on the wagon, Gambo? Are you doing all right over there?
You know, it was so bad today that you know, I have a lot of my family that lives in Italy. And, you know, I have family that live in Rome. I have two cousins that live in Rome, a whole bunch of cousins that live in Messina and Sicily. I have cousins that live in Catania, Milan. So they're spread out. But, you know, the cousin I'm closest with, my cousin Francesco, when we got married in Italy, he was like, you know, he arranged everything. He was the best man at the wedding and all of that stuff. We're on this Life 360 thing where we all follow our family. And it's, you know, me and Chelsea and Brooke and Q and Gabby's on it. And, you know, we see where everybody is. And I have my cousin on there. I have him on there. So today, I basically followed him home from work all day today. He works in a warehouse, and I'm fine. Just for 40 minutes on his ride home, I just followed him. I kept taking pictures of where he is and everything and sending it to him. And, you know, so I just followed him. I followed him home, and I kept, like, every, like, 5 minutes, I send him a picture. And, you know, as he gets close, it shows you, like, what miles per hour you're going, and it shows you where you are. And so, like, for like basically 40 minutes of his ride home, I kept like texting him like, "I see you. I know where you are."
You're stalking him from half a world away.
Well, yeah, I was stalking him. Yeah, yeah. So, but he, you know, he follows us and we follow him on this Life 360 thing. So I could always see who my cousin is, and he could always see where I am, and tells you when your battery's low and stuff. But it gives you like really up to date pictures of where they are, like, you know, on a map, like with the buildings and everything right there, and what the names of the buildings are and stuff like that. No, the wine thing is, you know, I know I had this offer on American Express for wine. So, Chelsea likes wine, and I'll drink wine occasionally. So we ordered a bunch of wines. You know, she likes cabs and red blends, and I like Pinot Grigio and stuff. So we ordered a bunch of mostly from Italy, some from California, and some from France. But we ordered a whole bunch of wines and got the package yesterday.
She was gone, and they're like,
you have to be, you know, you have to sign for it because you can't just drop off like a whole bunch of liquor at somebody's house. So, you know, I kept waiting for the FedEx guy to show up yesterday, and it came right before one of our breaks. I'm like, I gotta get the door, you know, because they would take it, right? If they can't just leave it at the door because it's alcohol.
Well, I'm just, hey, look, man, as a guy who likes a cocktail every now and then, welcome to the club. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm having one of those.
Welcome to the box of wine getting dropped off at your front door club, because I've been there, my friend.
Yeah, no, I'm having one of those. God, I'm really kind of depressed today. I just want to get out of here. I want to go somewhere. I want to go see my family. I'm having one of those. I get these every once in a while. Chelsea's asked me like 5 times. You going to be all right? I'm just having one of those crazy, God, I really want to get, you know, it's been a while, right? Well, this pandemic, and we're stuck at home all the time. And today's one of those days where it just kind of hit me, man. I want to go, man. I want to go see my family. So now I'm even sending, I just sent Chelsea two houses for sale, two villas for sale in Italy. I'm like, that's, and now she's like, okay, you got to get up. I'm like, seriously, let's buy this now. And so she's like, all right, you have to stop. I said to her, like, I'm looking up real estate in certain areas, and I'm sending it to her. And so I'm like, Chelsea, come here. You got to see this one. You got to see. Look at it. It's right on the lake, and it's got a beautiful view of the lake. And she's like, you have to stop. Like, you really have to stop. So I'm just having one of those days.
All right. Well, let's try and cheer you up by talking about one of your favorite topics, I know.
Yes.
Let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
Josh Jackson, I know, one of your favorite topics in the whole wide world. You love talking about Josh Jackson. You love
Speaking about the former third pick overall in the NBA draft, I know you do. Don't act like you don't. The Phoenix Suns will get to see Josh Jackson, we presume, tonight, as their three-game road trip begins this evening in Detroit, taking on a very bad Pistons team in a game that is one of those moments for the Suns that if they're really as good as everybody thinks they are and thinks they could be, then this is one of those take care of business, blow them out by 20 points, give yourself a nice, easy, soft landing to start this road trip. And, oh, by the way, welcome in Josh Jackson, who should make his return tonight for the Pistons.
Yeah, had an ankle injury. He was inactive for the game against Milwaukee. Didn't play. Still only 23 years old, believe it or not. They're getting good reviews from him. Averaging 15.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, and a steal, playing 24 minutes a game. So he's supposed to be back. But this is a team with the start they're off to. There's a lot of talk in Detroit right now about you got to trade Derrick Rose. You got to trade Blake Griffin. You got to trade these guys. These guys aren't the future. Killian Hayes, who's hurt right now, got a hip injury. Killian Hayes is the future. Sadiq Bey, Jeremy Grant, Wright. Those guys are the future. Play those guys. It's a waste to play Blake Griffin. It's a waste to have Derrick Rose. Sure, he can mentor the young Killian Hayes, who's only 19 years old, but get something for these guys while you can. So the more games they lose, the closer they can. And they're probably right there now. But the closer they come to throwing in the towel on everything and moving these veteran players, if they can get something for them to try to do it, their future is the young kids, Hayes and Bay. Grant could be the veteran leader on that team. But this is a really, really bad basketball team. So the Suns have to, they've got to end this team early. I mean, beat this team, beat them up. They're not very good. Don't let them hang around in this basketball game. Go get another win.
Yeah, it's something that we saw a lot with the Cardinals, and we all got very, very tired of seeing it with the Cardinals. And I don't want to think the Suns are going to be afflicted with the same issue, and that's playing down to your level of competition, right? That's lowering your standards because you're playing a team that, let's be honest, you might have a hard time getting up for. Let's be honest, this is something we talked to James Jones about a couple of days ago, and he said, this is before the Raptors game. Now, the Raptors have championship pedigree, so I put them in a little bit of a different category. This Pistons team doesn't. They're 1-7, and by just about every single metric across the board, they are terrible. They're terrible offensively.
Defensively,
they're
so
really bad. Defensively, this is one of those games that, and I'm not trying to hype up every single Suns game because I get it, not every single one is going to be worth hyping up. But this early in the season, right, when we're looking for more evidence to believe that this team and this organization has turned some sort of a culture, I do think tonight's game, and actually it's this afternoon's game, it starts at 5:00. You'll hear it on ESPN 620. I do think today's game is somewhat significant because this is a really, really bad basketball team they're playing. And what you don't want to see is you taking them lightly, you kind of going soft on them, we got this. We can play at 80% and beat the Detroit Pistons. You don't want that. I want, that killer mentality that let's get up by 20 and let's stay there and let's blow them out because they're completely inferior. Because anything less than that, and you start wondering why they're playing down to their competition. I don't want to see that starting tonight.
No, listen, they got 3 first-round draft picks and a second-round pick who's actually playing too. Now, Hayes got injured, like I mentioned, but they had 3 guys that were drafted in the first round. All of them were getting play-in time. They got a second-rounder who's been basically on the bench in Saben Lee, but they're talking about now he needs to play. Dwayne Casey, I don't know, how long he's going to be there. It's a complete rebuild project. There's no reason for guys like Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose to be on this team because they're not going to win. So they're depleted. They're depleted. They're bad on offense. They're bad on defense. They know that they've got to, jettison out some of these, these veteran players that they don't want. Contracts are a factor in that. So this is a game you look at. You totally expect that the Suns are going to come out here and not only win the game, but, just take care of business early. These are tests for the Suns, though, Burnsy, because
yes.
They're not used to winning. I mean, you're 5 years of not winning. And now all of a sudden, you're expected to win. Oh, you're expected to beat that team. Oh, the Pistons are terrible. Now I've got an offense, defense. Their guys are hurt. They're playing a bunch of it's a test. Like, we're going to find out if the Suns are one of those teams that has a killer instinct or if it's a team that, plays to the level of its competition. And that's something that, with the Toronto game, you're right. Toronto had the pedigree. Lowry, Siakam. Van Vliet, they had the pedigree of a championship team. This team doesn't. So it's okay for a 15-point lead to evaporate or get down to, you know, six against Toronto because of the pedigree that they have. It's not okay for that to happen against the Detroit Pistons.
No, no, it's not. Our own Kellen Olsen wrote a story about this road trip, and he said Devin Booker could have, and we'll talk a little bit more about Booker later on in the show. This could be, not that he needs a breakout game. He's been fine, but we haven't really seen that version of Booker much this year. He's always shot very, very well in this building. This is basically the arena of what's considered his hometown team. He shoots 63% in four games in that building. Potentially, he could have a big game. Now, tomorrow's a slightly different story in that, yes, the Indiana Pacers probably not going to have T.J. Warren for that game. It'll be the second night of a back-to-back. Indiana's been good so far to start this year. 6-2 on the year. They're 10th on offensive rating, 9th in defensive rating. Only the Lakers, Nets, Suns, and Pacers are top 10 in both. They've gotten off to a very, very good start under their new head coach, Nate Bjorkgren. So that might be a little bit different. And then on Monday, it's the Wizards, and it's a lot like the Pistons. Bad team. Now they've got a spectacular backcourt in Beal and Westbrook.
Oh, my God.
But that's a bad basketball team so far to start the year. Oh, yeah, Beal. 60
in the losing. 60 the other night, and they lost?
Yep, sure did. So a really interesting road trip for a Suns team that suddenly has been, not burdened, but have been given expectations, and you're right, a team with expectations after going basically 5 years without any. How do they respond to that? How do they approach that will be a really, really interesting thing to watch.
Tell you, I go all out to win the Detroit game because tomorrow, I mean, Sabonis is playing out of his mind. Malcolm Brogdon is off to a great start. Oladipo looks good. Miles Turner, that's a good team. And even without T.J. Warren, that's a good team. So I don't want to rest guys tonight trying to win the Indiana game. I would rather make sure I get the Detroit win. Look, I'm expecting to lose a game on this seven-game trip. I'm expecting to lose one, maybe two. But I want to make sure I don't lose to the Pistons. If I lose to Indiana, okay, I could lose to Indiana. That's a pretty good basketball team like you just mentioned. So that's the difference. I have to make sure I get this win against Detroit. Hey, if I can blow them out and I can rest guys, I mean, that would be my motto too. I want to blow this team out. I want to get to the third quarter, and I want my bench guys playing so I can rest as many guys as I can for that game tomorrow because you're right, the Pacers are a good team, and they're playing well.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the NFL playoffs are here. What to expect from the wild card round in the NFC? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo show. It's a wild card weekend unlike we've ever seen before. Six games starting tomorrow, three on Saturday, three on Sunday.
I'll keep you busy.
And it will keep you busy, absolutely.
I'll keep you busy.
And,
yep, give you something to do.
Some of the games look very, very good. Some of the games look very intriguing. And others look like the type that you can, you know, run to the grocery store and get your shopping done for the week during because you don't really have to worry about it much. We'll look at them by conference. Not by day necessarily, but by conference. And we start, of course, with the home conference for the Arizona Cardinals, the NFC. Three games on tap. Rams taking on the Seahawks on Saturday. That's the second game. The late game on Saturday is the Bucks versus the Washington football team. And then the middle game, if you will, on Sunday, the Saints and the Bears. Your call, my friend. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with Rams-Seahawks. I mean, I don't think we like either one of these teams. I mean, the Rams have owned the Cardinals, and the Seahawks have been a thorn in their side for so long. I just don't see how Seattle at home loses this football game. Russell Wilson's playing so well. I think Johnny Wolford's going to be the quarterback for the Rams. You know, I don't know if Goff's going to be able to play. We don't know. He had a surgically repaired thumb. So I would expect that it's going to be Wolford, but McVay's being very hush-hush on it, so I'm really not sure. But should be one of those close football games. I think it'll be a close game, but I like Seattle's defense, man. I remember we had Brock Heward on the show when they were getting ready to play the Cardinals for the first time, and it was like, man, this defense is atrocious. They're terrible. They can't stop anybody. From that point forward, that defense really came on, and they've been playing great.
They have been playing great. It's a big reason why Seattle finished with the flurry that they did because it certainly hasn't been Russell Wilson. He, Pro Football Focus, has him as the 19th ranked quarterback since week 9. He's been kind of skittish back there. He's facing a lot of pressure. He's been very indecisive. He hasn't looked like Russell Wilson, and against what might be, you could argue, the best defense of all of the playoff teams in this year's postseason, NFC or AFC combined. This is a real scary matchup, I think, for Seattle. What Aaron Donald can do, what Jalen Ramsey can do against DK Metcalf, Sean McVay, I wouldn't say being 5-3 against Pete Carroll means he has Carroll's number, but certainly Sean McVay seems to have figured out a way to somewhat consistently beat Seattle. It didn't happen the last time they played. I'll be really curious, too, to see what happens with the golf thing, whether he plays or not. I agree. I don't think he's going to, but if he does, I don't know. I read a couple interesting things about this game. One that suggested, man, if Goff plays and they don't win, Rams fans are going to be very frustrated with Goff and wonder whether they can really win anything with him there. And then kind of, even though they had a lot of success early with Pete Carroll, and he always gets them into the playoffs, they haven't done much in the postseason the last few years, right? There's another year of getting bounced in the first weekend or the second weekend would be another year of Russell Wilson's potential and his best years kind of wasted, you know? And how many more of those years, not that they're going to make a change of coach, but you've only got so many of these years left in Russell Wilson, you don't want to go wasting them by flaming out in the first or second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that this is a good matchup for them with all the injuries that the Rams have had, and Seattle has really turned it around and played a lot better defensively. So I think they're in a good spot here. I think Green Bay's the odds-on favorite. They're playing great. Russell Wilson is really Aaron Rodgers has really taken to that offense. So I feel good about Green Bay right now. I think a lot of people like Green Bay or New Orleans before they like Seattle. There's still some doubts about Seattle. You know, their Super Bowl odds are plus 1,200. Their chance to make the Super Bowl is an 8.9%. So there are still some doubts about Seattle's ability to put it all together and go win 3 games that will get them into the Super Bowl.
All right, the evening game tomorrow is Tom Brady and the Buccaneers against the Washington football team. Ron Rivera talking about Tom Brady and how he's throwing the football right now like he's 23 years old.
I didn't realize he was 43, because I tell you what, he throws the ball like he's 23. He really does. He's got the arm strength. He delivers a good ball. He's still, you know, who he is, and that's the scary part.
I want to think that this game is going to be a blowout, Gambo. Little voice inside my head is telling me that Washington can make a football game out of this. I don't know why. I just have a funny feeling Washington's going to make a football game out of this.
Yeah, because their defense, because they've got a really good defense. I don't know. I would say Tampa Bay wins by double digits. Washington, they're in a bad division. They're a bad football team. I know their defense is good, but I just, you know, since the bye, that offense has started to click a little bit more with Tampa. I mean, Brady's 13 out of 25 for 452 yards and 6 touchdowns on throws 20 yards down the field or more. That all leads the league in that time frame. So that was the knock, and Brady can't get the ball down the field. Oh, Bruce is making him throw the ball. No risk it, no biscuits, not going to work. Well, it took some time, but now all of a sudden, Brady on those throws 20 yards down the field or more, he's connecting on those throws. So I think that they can run the ball. I think, if you know, the way to beat Brady is to knock him around, and maybe Washington and Chase Young and that defensive front can do it. And if they do, they'll be able to stay in the game. But I understand a lot of people are going that way. I'm not going to be sold on that. I think Tampa wins the game. I think they win it by at least 2 touchdowns.
Okay. And then the third game, which is the middle game on Sunday, is the one that, for my money, if I'm picking one game where I'm running some errands or getting a couple things done on my to-do list and I'm not watching football, I'm not going to lie to you, this is the one. The Saints and the Chicago Bears. I think for me, this is the surest bet on the board. This is the game I feel the most comfortable about.
You love the Bears.
This is the one. I say again?
You love the Bears in this one.
Oh, yeah. I love the Bears. Yeah, love me some Bears in this one. Sorry, Bears fans. And I could be wrong. I mean, the NFL playoffs, if nothing, they prove they're very unpredictable. I just feel like it's weird. Even though the Bears are the 8th seed or the 7th seed, I feel better about Washington's chances against Tampa than I do the Bears' chances against the Saints. I don't think that much about the Bears.
Especially if Kamara plays. So if Kamara plays, that's a big deal too, because he's so great. But they're expected to get those guys back, right? Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. I think the Saints win this one going away too. I would agree with you. The Bears, Trubisky's definitely played better since he came back. I think that break when they went to Foles probably helped him quite a bit. But overall, they're not going to have the firepower to play with New Orleans. Now, Breeze is, he's not the same quarterback that he used to be either. But that offense has just too many weapons. And I think the Bears' defense, some people like them. And I like that Roquan Smith. I like the Bears' defense a little bit too. But they're not going to be able to slow that team down very much, I don't believe.
Yeah, I feel really good about the Saints in this game because I think the Saints' defense, we talked about the Rams having one of the best defenses in the playoffs. I think the Saints are right up there too, and I just don't – I think what Trubisky did is a little bit more of a function of the schedule that they played down the stretch rather than how much better he was playing.
And then think about this. The last time the Bears won at the Superdome, 1991, Superdome. Jim Harbaugh,
a long time.
And Brad Muster and Neil Anderson for the Bears. That's the last time they won at the Superdome. And this is a team that had a 6-game losing streak this year. I mean, not many teams make the playoffs that had a 6-game losing streak. The 70 Bengals and the 2014 Panthers are the only other ones. But they've had no success winning at that place. 1991 was the last time they did it. Yes, Trubisky's playing better. I don't think there's any question about that. But I just don't think that they have the firepower offensively to score enough points to stay with New Orleans. Now, not like New Orleans is going to score 40, but if New Orleans scores 28, I don't think that the Bears could play that. And the Bears don't take the ball away either. They're 25th in the NFL in takeaways. So it's not like they come up with a lot of interceptions and fumbles. They just don't do that. It's not that type of team.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, Phoenix Suns sitting on top of the Western Conference while their best player, quite frankly, hasn't played to the level to which we are accustomed. Should we be worried about that? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
We welcome Sarah into the show. We were just talking about the NFL playoffs a second ago. Upset potential this weekend.
Yes.
Who should be on upset alert? Who are we thinking could be on upset alert? That's kind of what we're going for today, right?
That is precisely what we are going for today. We picked out three matchups, and we asked which of those three games do you think is most likely to result in an upset this weekend. Now, this is with the understanding that with the Ravens-Titans game specifically, the Titans are a 4 seed, the Ravens are a 5 seed, but the Ravens are favored as far as the line goes. So I just said, based off seeding, who do you think is most likely to pull off an upset, or which matchup is most likely to result in an upset. So the three games for you to pick from, the 5 seed Ravens and the 4 seed Titans, the 6 seed Browns and the 3 seed Steelers, or the 6 seed Rams and the 3 seed Seahawks.
Titans.
Browns.
Really?
Browns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Browns. Okay. Of those, the one I would have picked is not on this list.
Ooh, which one is that?
Washington.
Okay.
Washington over the Bucks. I think I would have picked that. I think I would have. Sorry, I didn't mean to add one to your mix that wasn't in your mix.
No, it's all good.
I think I would have picked. But of these three, Browns over the Steelers. I did not like the way the Steelers closed the season. I didn't like, and I know the Browns. They're practicing today for the first time all week. Yeah. They are so handicapped in this matchup. I get that, but. I just didn't like the way the Steelers closed the season at all.
Can I throw a little damper on just your prediction? I'll give you like one chance to retake it.
Oh.
So the Browns, they haven't won a playoff game since Bill Belichick was their coach.
I know.
It's 1994. If they are going to win a playoff game, they're going to have to beat the Steelers for the second time in 2 weeks. They haven't beat the Steelers 2 times in the same season since before my wife was born. 88. Yeah, my wife wasn't even born. That time.
It's been a while. I know it's been a while.
Season beating Pittsburgh, 88. The only player on the Browns roster who was even alive when that happened was Case Keenum.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go with Cleveland, go with Cleveland. But I'm just, you know,
I appreciate that. In my mind, I'll explain to you why I'm going with Cleveland. I'm going with Cleveland because in my mind, the Rams beating the Seahawks really isn't that big of an upset. And even to a certain extent, the Titans beating the Ravens, I don't really think that that's big of an upset. I'm going bold, Gambo. I'm going bold. All right, I want something big and bold. And the Browns beat the Steelers would be bold this weekend. So I understand the numbers are against me, but I'm going bold. What does our audience
top
say?
Top songs in 1988, Faith by George Michael.
That's a good song.
Got My Mind
like
Set on You by George Harrison. Never Gonna Give
also
You Up by
song.
Rick Astley. Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. Heaven's a Place on Earth by Belinda Carlisle.
Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate the out there, Gambo, but I'm going to stick with it.
You know what? Burnsy? Listeners are with you, too.
Oh, my
really?
Goodness. How dumb are our listeners?
Oh, do not say that. 41% went with the Browns and the Steelers as the game most likely to result in an upset this weekend. 37% are going with the Ravens and the Titans. 22% Rams and the Seahawks. So, Gambo, you may disagree, but your co-host and the majority of our listeners are going with that game.
Yeah, okay. Just Shake Your Love by Debbie Gibson, Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson, I'll Always Love You by Taylor Dane, Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard.
That was 88.
Get Out of My Dreams and Get Into My Car by Billy Ocean.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. We will see. But that is our poll
love
question.
By Phil Collins.
You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. Suns, Pistons today, 5 o'clock, ESPN 620. If you're looking for your what does that mean for the Pistons, you're not going to find it today.
that's right.
Bears, Cody's filling in. Bear is filling in for us today. So behind the board. So we only do it when Jordan and Gambo are here. So Jordan's not here with us today. He's got the day off. So we will not have a what does that mean for the Pistons, bad news for the Pistons, it won't happen. Not that he needs a get-right game. Do you think this is a get-right game for Devin Booker tonight? Does he even need a get-right game, given that his numbers aren't what we're accustomed to seeing out of him so far this year?
That's a fair question. I'm going to say no, he doesn't need a get-right game. He's an all-star. He's a proven player in this league, and you know, I mean, the Suns are 6-2, and it's about winning. And I'm sure Devin Booker would give up 35 points a night to win basketball games. It's a hell of a lot more fun to win games. I think we're all waiting for that one game, and it's coming. I mean, it could be tonight. Maybe it's tomorrow. Maybe they rest guys tomorrow, and they go to Book. Look, if we're going to beat Indiana, it's going to be you. Clearly, his numbers are down. I think I was looking at a Bright Side of the Sun piece. It was just showing differences from points per game, assists per game, rebounds per game. Shooting percentage, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, you know, and everything, turnovers, like everything's down. I mean, everything. He's averaging 5.1 less points per game, 1.9 less assists per game, 0.4 on the rebounds. His free throw percentage is down 14.6%. He was a 91.9% free throw shooter last year. This year he's 77.3. All of those things, if you want to factor them in, he's off to a little bit of a slow start. I don't expect it to stay that way. I think a lot of this, to me, this is my opinion, I think this is a big adjustment period. You're playing with different players, okay? You're playing with Chris Paul, you never played with him. You're playing with Jay Crowder, you never played with him. There's times you're on the court with Galloway, you never played with him. So I think that's number one. And number two, they got 7-8 guys that could score in double figures on every given night. You don't have to do what you needed to do. And you also don't want to come off as the ball hog that's going to shoot the ball 25 times a game, because you know to win, you need your teammates to be actively involved in the game. So if you sacrifice some of your game and it helps the better good of the team, then so be it. And I think that very well could be happening with Booker right now.
Yeah, I think there's something, even though his assists are down, I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I think right now Devin Booker's just trying to find his place on this team, because he doesn't. I think you're absolutely right. I think he's so used to taking these things over, being counted on to take these things over, to shoot a high volume of shots, to kind of be the man. I think he's, and this might take a while, to be honest with you. I mean, this. I'm looking at the same article from Bright Side of the Sun, And one of the conclusions, one of the suggestions, maybe not even a conclusion, but a suggestion was that, I mean, it might take 20 games or so before we really kind of, he figures it out and Chris Paul figures it out. And as long as they're winning, I'm fine with that. And look, these numbers, as long as they're winning, I don't care that he's averaging 5 points per game less. I don't care that his assists are down. I am a little concerned about the free throw percentage, and I think that's kind of a statistical aberration, to be honest with you. He's, I mean, a 92% free throw shooter a year ago, 77% so far this year. That's going to change. The number of free throws he's attempting per game hasn't been at a number that I would like. But as long as they're winning, and as long as he's just trying to figure out his place and his role on this team, given all these new toys that he has to play with, I'm not that worried about it. I'm really not that worried about it at all.
No, you shouldn't be, because, again, this there is an adjustment. There is a sacrifice to make. Then, you know, we talked about the Utah game where he was it the New Orleans game where he scored less than 10 points, scored 8 points, and they won going away. And they'd never won a game like that when he scored less than 10. They had never won one. I believe they were 0-9. And now he's adjusting to playing with there's more ball movement. There's a lot more three-point shooting. Now, what's going to happen is in the playoffs, his numbers will probably go up because he's the elite player and a lot of the other guys are not. And so those guys, they might not be as effective. And then the bench shrinks a little bit in the playoffs and maybe only play nine. You're not playing as many, and you'll rely more on Booker then than maybe you are right now. I think Monty very much wants to make sure that everybody is touching the ball and everybody's seeing it and doing their things. I'd have to look at his shots more than anything, you know, because these numbers show one thing. But how many times is he shooting the ball? Is he shooting the ball less than he normally shoots the ball? Because that's the telltale sign. I mean, is he getting less shots than he normally does?
He is. He's getting about 3 shots less per game, 2.5 to 3 shots less per game than he did all of last year. So he is
okay.
He is. The number of attempts has definitely gone down. The turnovers obviously have gone way, way up. It's okay. It's okay for now, as long as they keep winning. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, one of the NFL's best quarterbacks. There was a lot of speculation about him yesterday and whether the Houston Texans would dare dream of trading him. Those thoughts got a little bit of fuel today, and we'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, I want to start this conversation about Deshaun Watson and the Texans, Gambo, if I may,
ridiculous,
with a hypothetical for you. All right. Okay, you ready
it's
for
ridiculous.
A hypothetical?
So ridiculous. Go ahead.
Okay. I retire.
Yeah.
Okay? I retire. Management of the station goes to you and says, we want you to have a say in who Burnsy's replacement is going to be. They then hire somebody without consulting you in any way, shape, or form after promising that you would have a say in who takes over for me. Are you upset?
Well, that's a good hypothetical. Probably. Yeah, probably.
Okay. Because that's, if we're to believe what's being reported about Deshaun Watson, that's what's gone down in Houston.
Deshaun Watson, I'm 54 years old. I've had a proven track record for 25 years. The kid's 25 years old. What the hell does he know about hiring a general manager? I mean, honestly, what does he know?
We're not talking about he's going to have a say in it. He has already been told he was going to have a voice in the process.
But you can't listen to his voice. You can't listen to a 25-year-old kid. The inmates don't run the asylum. I mean, if you said it like, hey, our main boss, say it's Scott Sutherland or Ryan Hatch or Rod Lakin, they're leaving. And one of our bosses is leaving. And they come to me and I say, you know what? I want to say in who the boss is going to be. I want to say in who the boss is going to be. So I think it's a little bit different saying who's going to be doing the show with me. You know, I mean, Deshaun Watson might have a, hey, listen, we're looking at some wide receivers. You want to tell me who you like to throw the ball to? Yeah, I'll tell you who I like to throw the ball to. But when so I think your hypothetical is a little off. That's just my opinion. Because I think it's more likely, realistic to say, you know, okay, say I retire. Okay, because I'm going to retire before you. You know, would you want to?
Says you.
Seriously.
I am.
Says you.
I am.
That's a bet I'll take right now.
You're going to retire before me?
Sure, let's go.
You want to bet that?
I'll bet you 10 lunches on that. Maybe. Oh, maybe.
Deal. 20.
But, okay, go ahead. Finish your thought, because I think
the point is I should have no say in who the general manager of our radio station is or who the program director is or anything like that. I shouldn't have a say in that. The hell do I know? That's not my business. That's not my business. Deshaun Watson's a 25-year-old kid. The hell does he know about who should be the GM? The only thing, he's going to get it from his agent. His agent's going to say, this guy should be good. He doesn't know any of these guys. He's a football player. He was in college a couple of years ago. He can't give you input on who the GM should be. And if he is giving you input, he's getting it from his agent. You can't take that advice from that player. You can't. You can't take his advice on who the GM should be. You can't. You want to pick his brain on, hey, there's some free agent wide receivers out there. Which guy do you like? Okay. All right. Because you're going to throw the ball at those guys. That's fine.
Okay.
You played
then
with
don't
them, but
offer
not
it
the
to
GM.
Him. Then don't offer it to him. Then why did you offer it to him?
Because you try to
if
appease
you're the Houston
him.
Texans.
You try to be like, hey, well.
But you can't have it both ways. You can't offer it to him.
Shouldn't have offered it.
Deny him that.
Should never offer it.
And then expect him not to be. Yes, they offered it.
They should have never offered it. I'm telling you, they should have never offered it.
Well, they did, and so that's their mistake.
Yeah,
that's not Steve McNair's mistake. That's not Deshaun Watson's mistake. That's the Houston Texans' mistake for offering to that in the first place.
It's Cal McNair.
Because the minute they did that, they set up an expectation that he would have some sort of a say in all of this. And by giving him that and then denying him that, I think they've done him a little bit of a disservice. I agree with you. It really shouldn't come down to what Deshaun Watson thinks about who the coach is or who the general manager is. But the minute they gave him that power, they got to understand
you don't
he's
going to
be
power.
Upset when they complete. Well, that's so who's to blame here? The Houston Texans or Deshaun Watson? The Houston Texans are for giving him that in the first place.
They met with him over a Zoom meeting during the season to discuss candidates in the future of the franchise. They shouldn't have done that. They should not have met with him and said, we want your opinion on who the general manager should be. That is not something that you go to a 25-year-old kid and you ask him for his input. I mean, let's just say the Cardinals within the next year decide to move on from Steve Keim. You think Kyler Murray should be like, hey, I want to say in who the GM should be? Hell no.
No, I don't. But I think the Cardinals better not offer that to him, because if they do, they're going to create the expectation that he suddenly has a say in it.
Tom Brady shouldn't have a say in who the GM is.
Drew
Brees, they shouldn't have a say. That's not their place.
Yep. Then don't offer it to him. Don't offer it to him.
Agreed.
Okay, so I'm not going to get upset at Deshaun Watson for being upset. Because it was offered to him. A voice in the process was offered to him by the organization. I'm not going to be upset at Deshaun Watson.
Schefter reported that Watson
voice.
Schefter reported that Watson offered input on potential general manager candidates. And the Texans did not consider or consult with those endorsed by their franchise quarterback.
The story I read from Ian Rappaport, Texans owner Cal McNair previously informed Watson he would be involved in the process and would be asked to provide feedback during the team search for a general manager and a head coach. They offered it to him and then ignored everything he had to say about it when they had previously given him that freedom to offer up suggestions. Now, should they trade him because of this? No. Should they, should he force a trade because of this? No, but an organization that, let's be honest, has had some real kind of dysfunctional structural issues the last couple of years, is this a really, really bad look to go offering something to Deshaun Watson and then pulling the rug out from underneath his feet? Look bad? Yep, sure does. Looks bad to me.
I mean, I have no idea why they would, that you sit down in a Zoom meeting and the season was a disaster and, maybe he says, hey, listen, I'd like some input on who the – and at that time, maybe just get caught off guard. You're like, oh, sure, yeah, we'd love to hear from you. You're trying to appease the kid. You don't want him to trade him. So he says to you, he goes, hey, I'd like to have some input on who the GM is going to be. Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe you just appeased him. Like, yeah, we would love to hear from you, and you're our franchise guy. And, you don't want to sit there and say, man, what the hell do we want your input for? Who are you? Play football. Like, you're not the GM. You play football. If I'm going to hire, if I'm going to sign a running back, I'll ask you if you like the guy or not. But at the GM, like, what do you know about GMs? So maybe they got there. Maybe they're fragile, right? I mean, had a terrible year. They don't have any draft picks. Maybe it's just very fragile in there. I'm walking around on eggshells right now. And so they decided to just appease the kid and tell him, yeah, we'll give you some say in it, with no real intention of having him have any say in it.
Yeah, then they probably shouldn't have said it. In other news today, and we don't want to minimize this because I know there are longtime baseball fans. We're really switching gears on you here. Rest in peace to the late Tommy Lasorda, former manager of the L.A. Dodgers, who,
wow.
You know, it's you know, my first reaction to this story was today. This is weird because you know how I feel about the Dodgers. I know how you feel about the Dodgers. In a weird way, I was glad that Tommy Lasorda lived long enough to see the Dodgers win a World Series before he passed. Even though I would never root for the Dodgers in a million years, I was glad to see that he was able to see that happen before he passed away, because it had been a long time between World Series.
Yeah, 20 years as the Dodgers manager. He won the two World Series. You know, I'll never forget, as you know, as a kid, the Yankees-Dodgers World Series, 77-78, you know, some of the best memories of my life. Reggie Jackson hitting the three home runs and, you know, Bucky Dent against the Red Sox. And that's some of the best memories of my life as a kid, you know. Catfish Hunter and Mickey Rivers and Goose Gossage and you're going up against, you know, Tommy Lasorda's Dodgers. And he replaced Walter Alston. And they had, the Dodgers had this unbelievable run of just having, you know, this not many managers for all those years. And he was just great. And I think, you know, in many ways, I just think that he meant so much more to baseball than just being a manager. You know, he was just such a fun-loving guy. And he, I mean, you know, when you think of faces of the franchise for the Dodgers organization, I mean, Tommy Lasorda, he's the first one you think about to me, because he's been there so long and he cared so much about it.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, last year, the Phoenix Suns got off to a very similar hot start like they did this season. What's the difference? Why is this team more poised for success than last year's? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.